Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In 1991, Edward Nardi White and his late wife, Zambia Nkruem, founded the River City Drum Corps Cultural Arts Institute in Louisville, Kentucky, to help kids learn about Pan-African cultural heritage and drumming. The Corps has helped hundreds of students embrace African drumming and get a cultural arts education. It also has provided youth a sense of community and empowerment in their West End neighborhood. After nearly 30 years, Edward White is passing the baton over to fellow drummer and former student Albert Schumach, who also grew up drumming in the River City Drum Corps. In the film, we follow three young drummers, Imani, Jalen, and Emily, and we watch them as they struggle with life changes and economic challenges. In the Corps, they find a sense of community and a lot of purpose. You can find screenings at rivercitydrumbeatmovie.com, and there's a link on our website, yourcallradio.org. Joining us now are two directors of the film. Marlon Johnson is a 10-time Emmy Award-winning producer and director. He has worked on a number of award-winning documentaries. Hi, Marlon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Anne Flatte is an award-winning filmmaker whose work highlights stories about music and community, and she has directed and produced many films as well. Hi, Anne. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Rose. It's great to be here.
Well, it's such a great film. Thank you both so much for bringing us this incredible story. Marlon, can you first talk about how you and Anne connected to work on this film?
Yeah, sure. Well, both of our careers have led us to produce a lot of documentaries about movies. And we had an opportunity to work in Miami on something that Anne was producing. And she has a partner in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, Owsley Brown, who's from Louisville. And he has known about Mr. White. He has known about the organization for some time and always wanted to do something but wasn't quite sure. And what led us to make the film was Mr. White's announcement that he was retiring. And so we knew then that there was a sense of urgency that we had to capture this transition of this great organization. And so I came out and didn't even really film. I had the great opportunity to just talk and listen to the community and be present for about a week or so, just to see whether or not it was something that was a good match. And unfortunately it was, and the rest was history from there.
What was that experience like to spend a week with the group to see if it was a good match?
It was exhilarating. It was humbling. So many of Mr. White's lived experiences and Ed's and Albert's lived experiences intersected with mine, being both, you know, an African American male living in America, also being artist. We had so many similarities that it was a great match very, very early on. And I knew that both Anne and I were the right people to tell the story.
Anne, what would you add? Can you talk about what it was like when you first learned about Mr. White and the Corps and why you decided that it was a good fit?
Sure. As Marlon said, you know, I've been working on films related to music for years, and some of those films have brought me to Louisville over the years, working with different groups like the orchestra and composers and conductors. And so I had, you know, the Drum Corps in Louisville is pretty well known, like they're around a lot, and Owsley had known about them for a long time. And Mr. White and Owsley had talked a lot about, yeah, you know, there should be a film about Drum Corps. And so at some point I went and visited like the community during a family night, and I got the chance to talk deeply with Mr. White about his life, and he just made such a huge impression on me. I mean, he's had so much life experience and experience with children, you know, and education and arts education, and it's just, I was really moved by what I saw there, which was this whole community of caring adults, because it was family night and everybody was there, and I met Imani and Jalen, who were, I think, freshmen at the time. And when we eventually made the film, they were seniors. And so, you know, like with a lot of documentary ideas or projects, it takes a long time for them to kind of come together. And when Marlon, you know, met Mr. White and Albert, you know, there was just such a strong connection. And I always say this, like, Mr. White chose us this as much as we chose to do the film, you know. You know, there was kind of like this process of getting to know us, and I think as parents, like, I'm a parent and Marlon's a parent, and you know, just incredible work that goes into raising children in America and everywhere, and how hard it is, and then seeing it in the context of, you know, the West End is just like, you know, a whole another set of circumstances. And so so it just all became so important to tell, you know, to basically bring these stories that had been going on for years that very few people outside of the West End had heard.
Right. And we're going to play some clips throughout the show. But first, to give listeners some context, tell us more about the West End. For people who don't really know much about Louisville, you do a really good job of showing different sides of Louisville, the large buildings, the restaurants, and then we see the West End. And, you know, Albert talks about how there are liquor stores on every corner, and you drive down the neighborhood. Why don't you tell us more just about the West End neighborhood, Marlon? And first off, the sense of community, because I feel like I really struggle with this. We do so many shows about poverty, neglected neighborhoods, and I feel like we dive so fast into what's bad about the neighborhood, but there's such an amazing sense of community in these neighborhoods. So can you first talk about that?
Yeah, most definitely. I will say that, you know, West Louisville is a community that does have some of the same systemic challenges that that so many African-American communities across this country face. But despite that, there are a great deal of beautiful, caring, loving people in this community that are fighting those odds. You know, it's a community that's big on sports, but there are a lot of kids in the community who have no interest in sports, who, you know, through programs like this are getting a chance to express their artistic talent. It's a working class neighborhood, with a great sense of community, and it is a village. And each person in this village is responsible for shaping and molding the kids in this community. I am from a community in Miami that is similar to the West End, so there were a lot of parallels for me. And we as filmmakers think that it's important to really highlight the beauty that exists in this community. You know, again, so much of the media oftentimes falls into a trap of portraying it through a certain lens, and we wanted to shift that narrative, to shift that conversation, because we see much more of the beauty that exists there.
Right. In fact, one of the women that you interviewed at one of the performances said the media always show the bad side of our neighborhood, and this is showing the positive side.
Absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, the people in the film say it often, actually. It's a common theme, is that, you know, the news is not the full story of what's happening. It's a small part of the story, but it becomes like the overall narrative, and that is really not the truth of what's going on in, it's not the whole thing, you know? And so what she says is, you know, we don't see stories about the caring adults who are doing, trying to do the best for their children,
right,
you know, given the circumstances. And that's what that event that they're attending is. And that's what the film is. That's what the drum corps does, is, you know, provide an alternate vision of what life is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
And we were very intentional as storytellers. Sorry to cut you off. We were very intentional as storytellers to make sure we didn't fall into that usual trap of only highlighting, you know, the crime, poverty, mm-hmm. you know, disparity, you know, all of those trappings, so to speak, because there was such a wide variety of lived experiences and such beauty.
Exactly. And then you also do provide historical context. There's a scene in the movie where Mr. White is looking at this beautiful sculpture of Abraham Lincoln and then slaves in chains. And we also meet the amazing sculptor in your film. And Mr. White said, you know, they took the chains off, but we're not free. He was really talking about the lack of economic opportunity that is the case in so many neighborhoods like the West End.
Yes.
Yes, yeah, and we definitely wanted to include what the reality is, that, you know, the legacies of, you know, of racism and socioeconomic disparities, and he talks about it explicitly. I mean, you know, redlining, all of the things that go into creating the situation that people find themselves in, which we are now, you know, talking about a lot, the systemic injustices. And so that scene, what was interesting about that scene is we early on made a decision that we wanted to tell the history of the city of Louisville and its place in that through art, you know, as opposed to information. So Mr. Hamilton, Ed Hamilton, who's the sculptor in the studio who you meet, who created that monument, you know, is actually a mentor for Mr. White, and then in turn a mentor for the students of Drum Corps. And that mentorship idea is all over Drum Corps. Like, it's not just about drumming. They say that so much. It's about connecting kids with resources, you know, whether it's mentorship, culture, arts education, history, all of these things. It's a very big vision.
And Marlon, I was really struck when Mr. White was talking with Ed Hamilton. Mr. White said that he was always told as a young black child that black people don't do art. He said he was hardly ever able to finish his projects, and that's really all he wanted to focus on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He talked about that in the film. And, it, you know, so many of us as artists, as black artists, as artists of color, have similar experiences. You know, so many of the resources for us are specific to sports, unfortunately, you know, as black men. And, you know, I'm a product of an arts organization program and arts high school. And when I was able to be introduced to art, it really opened up a whole other world for me and really help shape the way I see and perceive. And that's a beautiful thing, to allow kids to have that opportunity. And we need to take some of the energy, some of the resources, and refocus it in the arts, because arts are so transformative, and we need to embrace it at every level.
Yeah, exactly. We've done so many shows about the arts and the lack of arts funding in schools. And I'd love to, actually, we should do another show about that, because right now with COVID, it's just so hard,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because the arts is really probably missing from so many children's education right now. Let's talk about Edward Nardi White and how he started the Drum Corps. He started the Drum Corps with his late wife, Zambia, in 1991, and she sadly passed in 2010. We do meet her. I love the last part of your film where we learn more about her, and we actually see her speak at an event. Can you talk a little bit about what you learned about the two of them, Anne, and what really inspired them to start the Drum Corps?
Sure. Well, Zambia Nkrumah was a teacher in the public schools in Louisville, and also she was very connected with African heritage and, you know, Black power, and, you know, brought her knowledge of all of the people that she had met along the way to the place where Mr. White was working at the time. He was at the Boys and Girls Club, and, you know, it was a very sports-focused program, and he made a huge effort to expand the focus to include more art for the kids, and she and he started working together to do that and introduce the kids to drumming, brought in other African-American artists to show what they were doing with music and drumming and culture. And it just kind of grew organically from there. And so at some point he went, you know, independent and created this grassroots community organization called River City Drum Corps together. And she was kind of like the education director, you know, and obviously, she was a huge inspiration for almost everybody who met her, including Mr. White, and also very much Albert Shoemake, who then is the person that Ed White is passing, you know, the leadership to during the film. And what happened with us was, you know, we sadly never had the opportunity to meet Zambia in person, but we kept hearing about her from kind of everybody. And she became like this presence. We perceived the truth, which was that she is there in sort of legacy and in presence. And we wanted to figure out a way to do that in the film that felt true to that. And so that's what we did.
I mean, she seems like such an amazing, she was such an amazing woman, Marlon. Some of the youth mm-hmm. have photos of her on their mirrors, and they say, you know, in the process of filling out college applications or doing something that's kind of difficult, they say she's always mm-hmm. watching me and giving me inspiration.
Yeah. And as filmmakers, it also felt that way, like Anne said, when we were making the film. The viewer experiences her presence along the way in the way that we did. We don't dump a whole bunch of information about her in the beginning. We didn't receive it that way as storytellers. But every step of the way, she gets revealed, and her presence and her impressions get revealed more and more until the very end, when it's the big payoff and she's you know, celebrated and revealed in the most beautiful way. And so to not have her as a pivotal part of the film would be doing their story an injustice. And so we were delighted to include her in the way that we did.
Today we're speaking with Marlon Johnson and Anne Flatte, directors of the new documentary River City Drumbeat. It's about the power of an arts education, but it's about so much more. It's about connecting kids with resources, mentorships, teaching them about their culture. For nearly 30 years, Edward Nardi White has led this African-American youth drum corps in Louisville, Kentucky. Now we're going to play a clip from the film. And in this clip, you will hear from Mr. White. He talks about the neighborhood that he grew up in. You will also hear from Albert Shoemake, who first met Mr. White when he was just 8 years old, and now he is going to be taking over the drum corps.
You know, this is a neighborhood that I grew up in. This was the original church. Okay, so it was, you know, the center of the Black community, because Black people lived in the community, but we were all scattered. So, you know, this street was all African-American, black, however you want to call it, when growing up. That yellow house down there, my grandmother bought that house in 25. Well, that was the community house. My mother and my cousins, my brothers, my sisters. There's about 15, 20 people living in that house at one time. This was my community. There were certain routes that you could go through and nobody would bother you. But if you got off the route, then you would get yourself in trouble. Certain streets you could go through, and as soon as you hit the street, by the time it's nigga this, nigga that, nigga, 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 nigga. You hear me?
Oh my God.
That's my lovely wife. When I met Zambia, I was a director of the Boys and Girls Club. I saw a whole lot of children like myself who were artists. But this was a sports-based center. Zambia is the one that turned me on to the richness of African history and culture. And within that, drums, the children said, that's what we want to do. From there, it just kind of took off. And the whole art world just opened up for a whole set of children. Albert was one of those children. His mother and father were all types of substance abusers. Albert went to probably 6 elementary schools before he got out of elementary. He came under our tutelage, and we were able to get him resources. He went to the University of Kentucky on a vocal scholarship. So just think about that.
We were all into the music. We were all into what was popular. And he was trying to show us that we could create the popular culture. So, you know, now you can walk around and see people in dashikis and African garb like it's popular now. But back then, in 94, in my neighborhood, we got teased. You know, what, you trying to go back to Africa, this, that, and the other. Like, they had the jokes for us, but Mr. Nardi gave us cultural connection, taught us about prominent African-American historical figures that black people contributed a lot to society and a lot to America and the world. He was teaching us this when we were 8, 9, 10 years old, like just empowering us with this information.
And that is a clip from the new documentary. And today we're joined by two directors of the film, Marlon Johnson and Anne Flatte. We're going to take a quick break. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. Today we are discussing River City Drumbeat. It's a new documentary about the power of an arts education, about the power of connecting kids with resources, mentorships, and cultural connection. Today we're joined by Anne Flatte and Marlon Johnson, producers and directors of the film. Let's talk more about connecting kids with culture. We heard Arthur in that last clip talking about, you know, how he was made fun of when he was connected to his culture. Can you talk about that, Marlon? You know, what really struck you when you heard from the kids and what they learned about their culture?
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, I arrived during Kwanzaa, and just to see 6, 7, 8-year-olds reciting the tenets of Kwanzaa, and the absolute empowerment that gave them was truly, truly inspiring, because I know personally how far we have come, as Albert has explained in the film, to be culturally aware during a certain time was not fashionable, unfortunately. It was frowned upon. But once you are able to take a kid and reframe the way they think about themselves, the way they think about their culture, the way they think about their history, it arms them with a certain level of confidence that they might not otherwise have. And that's part of the beauty that is the program. And we as a society need to rethink our history and how it is taught and what is prioritized, because there's a whole group, it goes without saying, there's a whole group that has been underrepresented. And when you walk through life feeling underrepresented, it dictates how you perceive yourself and the decisions you make in your existence. So it's as important as anything.
And also, now that we're having a much needed conversation about race, racism, history, statues, what we learn in school, what we don't learn in school, one of the youth said, you know, it's so important to learn about African Americans who did amazing things. So to take it, obviously, the history of slavery is so important. I'm thinking also about Native history, where you talk about Native genocide, but it doesn't go much further than that. And the youth just said, you know, it's important to see ourselves, to see people who look like us, who really did good things. And they talked about how empowering that was.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll give you a small example, which is a slight divergence. But when I showed up to film, you know, as an African-American male with, you know, diverse crew, but me being, you know, both Ann and I couldn't always be there at the same time just for logistic reasons. And the kids were impressed that someone that looked like them was in a leadership role in this particular endeavor, and I had the backing of people behind me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize it at first, and Mr. White was like, this is very important for them to see African-American male director leading or, you know, co-leading the charge, because they had never seen those type of, you know, optics. Mm-hmm. It was the same for me coming and growing up as a filmmaker in my community, not really seeing anyone who looked like me, and how important it is. It sounds like such a simple concept, but it really is, in order to be able to be aspirational, in order to be able to think, to aspire to your highest potential.
Wow, that's amazing. And then, and also, the Drum Corps travels around the country performing, which really introduces them to new places, to new people. They're able to see historically black colleges, which is also very powerful.
Yeah, indeed. You know, the power of travel also, a lot of times, you know, kids that grow up in those type of neighborhoods don't get to see, you know, 3-4 miles outside of their own existence. And once you're able to see other parts of the country, see other ways in which people exist and different cultures, it expands your imagination. It expands the possibilities. It expands what your wants and desires are, and you realize and can see the humanity and the similarities and cultures and other people who may not necessarily have the exact same experiences as you, but definitely a powerful, powerful experience.
And since you have directed and produced many documentaries, Symphony for Nature, A Serenade for Haiti, you co-produced and edited Music Makes a City, what are the conversations you're hearing around these issues in the documentary world? Because, I mean, Marlon makes such a great point, just the power of someone like Marlon, a black man, going to Louisville to film this documentary and it making such an impact on the kids there.
Oh, yes. I mean, it is a very, very big conversation going on all over in every institution, not just documentary filmmaking, for sure. Just like what are the, you know, like, what is the awareness of these dynamics, and you know, how can the what they would call the industry or the occupation become, you know, more representative? And so I think this is something you're going to be hearing all the time about this year and in the future. And it's been brought up many times in the past as well, just like in all of the media organizations, you know, you know, endeavors. It's just like, who is doing what and why are they doing it?
Right.
And the power of representation in terms of, you know, creative leadership is totally paramount. And, you know, Marlon is saying quite clearly that for the Drum Corps, it was really, really important to be able to, you know, connect with Marlon, who's a successful artist, who is African-American, and that just in and of itself is empowering to the participants in the film. And so I think every film project kind of is asking these questions, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's such an important conversation to have, like you said, on so many levels. That is Anne Flatte. She's an award-winning filmmaker whose work highlights stories about music and community. Marlon Johnson is a 10-time Emmy award-winning producer and director, and they both directed the new documentary, River City Drumbeat. It's really an incredible documentary about the power of arts, about what happens when you connect kids in neglected neighborhoods with actual resources, the power of mentoring, the power of connecting kids to their culture. And I hope you can see this film. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. We have an email from Lee who says, in the 60s, every summer for all of elementary and junior high school, I enrolled myself in free summer school. Through that experience, I learned to love the arts and sciences as well as being with children from different neighborhoods. Arts are a key to creativity and resourcefulness. I look forward to watching your documentary. Well, thank you for that email, Lee. It reminds me of one of the comments one of the young girls made, Marlon, who said, you know, I'm not really sure what I want to do, but the Drum Corps is really giving me a sense of community.
Community.
And I think her dad said something like, I know that no matter what happens with her as she's heading into her teenage years, I know that she always has this group of people she can fall back on.
Yeah. Yeah. That was Emily in the film, and Cal, who's the father, and she's a middle schooler. And, the dad really expressed how he has a certain level of comfort in knowing that the village that has been created for kids like her can really help mold her. You know, I'm a father of four girls, and Anne is a mother of two teenagers as well, and so that really resonated in order to be able to have these safe spaces where kids can express themselves, when they can feel loved and a sense of self-worth. And it was also important for us to include, have female representation in the film, both Emily and Imani, who are drum leaders in the organization. It was very important for us to make sure that was included, as well as showing involved fathers. You know, we have the mothers who are clearly represented in the film, but to have involved African-American fathers who are underrepresented was important to us. And so, yeah.
Imani, she talked about how it's very interesting being a female drummer in the Corps, because sometimes people say, really, you do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anne, do you want to?
Definitely, it's an evolution, like so many things. You know, this is a wonderful co-ed drum corps. You know, and that is one of the joys of working with this drum corps, because it includes boys and girls, and that is not always the case. You know,
right.
and it was part of the original vision. It's not a new thing. It was always there, like from like Albert's sister, Brandy, was a very important person in the history of the Drum Corps. You know, there are so many stories that we wish we could have included in the film, but it just would have been too long. but rest assured that there are so many incredible individuals that made up that collective of community that you see. And so, yeah, but it's been an evolution. And I think we all know that, you know, the disparity between, you know, men and women still exists and it's present in lots of ways in the world. So that's part of the truth that we're trying to represent.
Well, and let's also, hear. Oh, go ahead.
I just want to make a point and also speak to the.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I keep thinking I should say this, Rose, when you're talking about how to do the film, because this is just before I forget, this is a new thing that is possible because of COVID, because the theaters are not able to have people come in person. Each independent theater is able to stream their programming. And so if you go to their website of like the Virtual Roxy, you will be able to just click on the film and watch it from your home. And it is kind of a new thing, but we encourage everybody to take the couple of minutes it takes to figure that out if you haven't done it before. Yeah. And it's kind of like getting a film from your independent bookstore instead of from Amazon. That's the best way of putting it.
Yes.
And so just wanted to make sure I said that because it's a new behavior, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for remembering that, Anne. I also want to say a point to the last point that we were talking about is that with regards to, you know, representation, that also was the beauty of our creative team and speaks to the power of diversity and the power of diverse hiring. Both Anne and I have, you know, slightly different life experiences, but, you know, being a woman, being African-American male, bringing all of those to the creative process was a great asset. You know, we could check each other and find blind spots that we might not have otherwise had pointed out if we were working either alone or someone that was similar. And so that's the beauty of having a diverse creative team.
Right. You know, I was going to play another clip, but I think that it might give away too much in the film.
Thank you.
Well, really, because you made me think that, you know, we do so many shows about documentaries, and I feel bad because some people say, you know, I don't live in a place where it's being shown. How can I see it? But now that it's online, anyone can see it. And so I think I'm not going to play the clip because it does give away too much. But I think it's important.
Okay.
I think it's important to say that, you know, we did a show about gun violence in, I mean, Chicago, Philadelphia, Kansas City. And we've done shows about Breonna Taylor, who was killed in Louisville. And in the film, the youth talk about the gun violence in their neighborhood. They talk about the gangs in their neighborhood. I mean, Arthur said, and again, Arthur is going to take over. Albert.
Okay.
Albert. He's going to take over the Drum Corps. He said most of his friends are either dead or they're in jail. And he said, I shouldn't even be here right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's just the story of so many kids across the country.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Mr. White says in the beginning, you know, this is a throwaway society. You know, we throw people away, you know, and the Drum Corps is trying to say to each kid, you know, you are worth it to you know, you have a whole universe inside you that needs to be, you know, nourished instead of thrown away. So Marlon can pick it up. But, like, that really struck me when he says that. And you can see it's true. I mean, you can see what, like, you know, the pipeline to prison and all of that. And, like, he's trying to create, like, a different kind of pipeline, you know, to college.
I was also, Oh, go ahead. And Marlon, I was also struck when Edward said, you know, education will set you free and take you out of bondage. And, you know, when he said that, I thought back to when he was standing by that sculpture saying mm-hmm. they took the chains off. But in many ways, you know, we're still chained. And I think that this is just so consistent. And mm-hmm. it's really shameful when you think about all of these communities that are neglected. And I actually really struggle with this too. Like, what word should I use? Underserved, neglected. Mm-hmm. I'm not comfortable with any of
that. You're not alone. You're not alone, Rose, in that sense. So,
yeah,
to your point.
At the end of the day, it's the political, the power structure that makes the decisions about how this money is spent. I mean, this is the huge conversation we're having about the hundreds of millions spent on weapons and police, whereas these kids don't even have access to arts education. I mean, it's just so wrong on so many levels.
Exactly. It's outrageous. It's outrageous. Yeah. You know?
And it also speaks to where, as a society, do we want to prioritize things and value. Exactly.
Exactly.
And, you know, we are going to make an investment in something. We're going to make an investment in either putting these kids away, or we're going to make an investment in nourishing and flourishing the best version of themselves.
Yeah, and... I mean, Mr. White says this, I've said this quote a couple of times, but it's so true. It's, you know, the future is not in front of us. It is behind us in the children we have raised. Mm-hmm. That is the quote, you know, it's like, it's happening right now. The future is happening right now, and it's in all the children, you know.
Right. And
how are we valuing them? You know, when you look at, you know, how we treat teachers, for instance, you know, and look, so
and educators and
and so part of this is just acknowledge. This film is, I think, acknowledging the enormous importance of caring adults giving their time and resources to children, even if they are not your children. You know, it's like, and I know that sounds really preachy, but it's just true that like we're all in this together. We are a community, you know. Mm-hmm. We are not separate.
Do you know, given that Mr. White ran this for more than 30 years, and at one point he thought maybe it would end, but luckily it's not going to, do you know if he got funding from government entities? I was wondering.
He talked about writing grants, and I think he got some... You know, I think that they do get some grants, but it's really a homegrown grassroots community. Most of the, I mean, you see all those people, all the parents, you know, that's all volunteer, you know, like it is coming, you know, he talks about like passing the hat in the community, you know, it's like, it's kind of like that, like put together. Yes, they do get grants from certain organizations in the city.
Yeah, let's all imagine, because we highlight so many amazing organizations and people doing work like this. If they got government grants, I mean, you could do so much with so little. And just the impact that he had. I mean, I loved at the end of the film, so many of these kids ended up going to college and they're so excited to get involved with music in college.
Yeah, or other things. I mean, they get to college and then they decide what they want to do, not necessarily music. That's the other thing. It's like some want to become music teachers, but some, like Jalen, wants to become a broadcast journalist and is actually doing that right now. Hmm. So yeah, it's a way to lots of paths, lots of opportunities, not just music.
Right. Marlon, you wanted to jump in?
No. Just the rich history that they've had of getting kids to college, which is one of their one of the goals, you know, and one of the markers of success of the organization is how many kids they're able to kind of help get into college. So, just wanted to add that to the.
Can I just add on to that? That one of the huge emphases that Mr. White says is it's not just about getting to college. It's also about like what happens once you're in college and and this is another, I mean, he just really sees the big picture, you know, like it's about giving kids skills to succeed in college, because it's not just about getting there. Once you're there, you actually have to stay there, and, you know, it's very difficult. So, you know, all of the support network comes in handy as well. And so he's also teaching a lot of self-sufficiency and decision-making and, like, being your own leader and leadership in your own life and things that come in, and just economics, you know, all of the things that you kind of need to stay in college. And, right. And so I, you know, in the film he says, you know, like, cause I think Marlon and I both felt, we talked about this a lot. A lot of films sort of have either a competition model where, like, it's all about a competition, like an arts competition. And we knew we weren't doing that. We were doing more of a community story. And, you know, and then there's also this thing about, like, get them to college, but then what? You know, it's like, mm-hmm. it's like he knows that it's about building the skills that you need to get all the way through college, you know?
Right. Well, we have a caller who's been waiting patiently. We're almost out of time, Michelle, but we wanted to take you. Thanks for calling in. Do we have Michelle? Oh, sorry, Michelle. I guess I went to you too late. Michelle wanted to talk about the value of art and how to teach art. Well, we'll definitely continue talking about these important issues. Final thoughts from both of you. It must be a strange time to be doing documentaries, because right now you'd be on tour. You'd probably have Mr. White and some of the youth with you on stage. Marlon, how are you planning to get this film out in the next couple months?
Well, you know, we have a virtual theatrical run, like Anne explained, that's happening over the next 2-3 weeks. And so we're really excited about that. We were fortunate enough, and I don't, you know, want to start complaining, you know, but we were fortunate enough to have it premiere at DocNYC to 3 different screenings, and it was received very well. And also in Miami, where it was also greeted with at the Miami Film Festival. And so we were fortunate that we did have a real world experience. And so now that we're pivoting, we are adapting like all artists and people are in the world. And so the virtual run is what we're looking forward to.
That's great. And we're almost out of time, but I also wanted to mention that you listed your film on Good Docs, which allows schools, libraries, nonprofits mm-hmm. to stream the movie, and you're offering it as an educational tool, which is fantastic.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. It is available to, you know, all educational institutions can, and schools, you know, can find it on Good Docs.
And so this can be streamed, and then there's educational elements for teachers, or maybe now parents who are teaching their kids at home. They can find more information about that on the website.
Yes, it's all there on our website and on the education page. And so we're getting it out in a variety of different ways, you know, kind of all different ways. And we're very excited that it's having this virtual cinema run, and after that, you know, and during it, there's different ways that community groups can screen. And we have been doing panels, online panels, with Mr. White and Albert and other participants of the film. We've been joined on Zoom. So we were able to both have a lot of the participants come to New York and Miami in person and have that experience of the live audience, which we're very grateful about before COVID. Mm. And then now we're carrying that energy into the virtual realm together.
Great. Well, Anne Flatte and Marlon Johnson, thank you so much for bringing this incredible story to us, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Anne Flatte and Marlon Johnson are producers of the fantastic new documentary, River City Drumbeat. Because of COVID, you can now actually watch it from your home and find more information at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.